view with State Representative Richard Mays, M-A-Y-S, one of first three black legislators in Arkansas. June 12th, 1974, Little Rock, Arkansas.
How about first, if you could just tell us a little bit about your own background?
Well,
and how you got involved in politics?
Well, this is my home. Little Rock is my home. I live here, with the exception of a few years during my early childhood. I lived in Tucson, Arizona. I went to high school here. I went to Howard University. I went to law school at Fayetteville, University of Arkansas. I worked a year with the Department of Justice in Washington, Criminal Division, Organized Crime and Racketeering Section. I came back here. And I worked as a deputy prosecuting attorney for a year, went into private practice with this law firm, former corporation.
Deputy prosecuting attorney here?
Right.
Was that in the U.S. Attorney's office?
No, deputy prosecuting attorney of Pulaski, for the prosecuting attorney for Pulaski and Perry County. So I left the federal government, went to work for the county government.
What year was that?
Well, I worked, graduated from law school in 68, and worked with the Justice Department 68, 69, basically 70, 71, deputy prosecuting attorney here locally. So I left Washington and came back here. At that time, you could practice privately and to some extent at the same time that you were performing your duties as deputy prosecuting attorney. That's ceased. Really, there was too much workload at that time to really do very much practice. I worked there for about a year, joined this firm, started working together in 71 through 73, although there were some other gentlemen here at that time when I came. I've been practicing here as a lawyer for about since 71, I'd say. And I ran for the legislature in 72. They redistricted this legislative area. And in redistricting, they came up with three-member districts in this area. Basically, the governor, the secretary of state, and the attorney general voted on the lines. And where we had been a multi-member district, we were divided into 5 3-member districts in the House of Representatives, and 5 3-member districts, single-member districts in the Senate. And one of the single-member districts was approximately 60% black, and one of the 3-member districts was approximately 60% black. There was a district in Pine Bluff which was majority black, a district, senatorial district in Helena in that area, which is 51, 52, 53% black. And there's another district, House district in Pine Bluff, which is 49, 50% black. At any rate, 3 blacks were elected to the House of Representatives for the first time in the 20th century, since Reconstruction, in 1972. And 1 black was elected to the Senate for the first time in the 20th century, since Reconstruction, in 1972.
And Arkansas was the last state of the old Confederacy in which blacks got elected to the legislature this century. Am I correct on that?
Yes, to the best of my knowledge. My understanding is the last state in the United States to have black membership.
Do you have any speculation as to why that is the case?
Well, the basis for the election, the electoral districts.
No, the reason why no blacks have been elected prior to 1972.
Well, you had no black majorities. Any significant black minorities. In other words, all of the districts were basically weighted toward the white majority. And this was probably intentional. The lines had not been redrawn, and so therefore there was no likelihood. People spoke basically along racial lines. And they still do, I don't know. Now, with 60% black or 59% black in this district, 41% white, you do have whites voting for blacks. This district has two black representing the district and two blacks and one white. So we still have one white who was able to get a sufficient number of black votes and retain sufficient strength in the white community to get elected. So specifically responding to your question, the reason was that people vote along racial lines and there were no black majorities. And
plus the district was a lot larger.
The districts, period, were a lot larger. This district was a multi-member district where you had a sizable black population. That black population was generally diluted in terms of voting strength by the concept of multi-member districts.
When did you get active in Democratic politics?
Basically when I ran for office.
72?
In 72. I had not really been active in any way. I had some association with persons who had been active with Governor Rockefeller, but I graduated from law school in 68, really did not return to the state until about 69 or 70, and had little or no input into the Democratic Party prior to that time. I got somewhat active in a campaign which the Republicans ran for the Senate and House of Representatives in 1970. This was during the at-large district era, and you had two blacks to run as Republicans for the Senate and for the House of Representatives. And one black at the time, Sam Sparks, ran what was considered to be at that time a pretty good race, because he did receive what was then considered to be significant white support. He lost, but he carried a few white precincts and got good support in the black community.
When you won that election in 1972, you must have had a set of attitudes or perceptions about how it would be like to be the first black in the House of Representatives, or one of the first. Did it turn out the way you thought it, or had you really
It was probably much more significant to me than it was to the total community. I dealt with it as significant because of the absence of any black participation, but it was uneventful, basically. The legislators were basically congenial and cordial, most, and those who were not were basically silent, did not evidence any real disenchantment with my presence or the presence of the other blacks. The position did not really provide the forum that I thought possibly could have provided. I don't think the black legislators were of that noticeable in this last legislative session. We just blended in. There was really not that much attention even paid to the fact that this was the first time that blacks had been members in that body. We were basically treated like white legislators. I'm not saying whether this is good or bad, but there was no big fanfare. Very difficult for a state representative, period, to gain that much credibility his first term. I didn't have that much of an idea about what assignment I wanted, but I guess judiciary, I preferred the Judiciary Committee. That was my first preference, and I did get that assignment. The Legislative Affairs Committee was the other assignment. I didn't know anything about it. It's not a very substantive committee, but you get one substantive committee and one other committee.
How about the bills that you sponsored and co-sponsored?
Bills that I sponsored, we got together initially and built.
Bills.
I sponsored, we jointly sponsored several bills. The bills which I dealt with individually were bills that I thought I might be able to get passed. They were fairly neutral bills, dealing with defects that I thought were in the law, basically formulated because of my involvement in law practice. One bill was a bill which was to make the uninsured motorist protection mandatory for common carriers. I thought the bill at this time if you were a passenger on a bus or a passenger in a cab and you were injured by an uninsured motorist, had no effective way to recover. In fact, these companies do not carry medical pay for the passenger. So I thought that was a glaring defect, and I thought it was relevant because of the busing. School busing, you have these common carriers carry a lot of young people because we have a substantial busing in our school program. So I felt that this kind of protection would be, a consumer. The bill did pass the House of Representatives, and I learned a little bit more about the session. By the way, my major was political science. My minor was business administration, so I was somewhat familiar with government. And the bill passed the House. I learned that a lot of people do not necessarily vote for your bill. It's one of these bills that passed with, I think it got 65 votes. A lot of people just were present and didn't vote. Didn't get many votes against it. Went to the Senate, and the lobby came. Senator Max Howell, who's a senator here, was somewhat disenchanted with me because I had not supported another bill that he'd indicated a preference for. And possibly, too, because of various other interests which he had some involvement with because of his extensive legislative tenure, indicated that a hearing should be held, and we held a hearing, and everybody with a bus, any kind carry. Now that was one bill.
So the bus lobbyist came.
Yeah, bus lobbyist came. I had received a letter from Art Monroe, who was the insurance commissioner, indicating that their rates would not be increased, at least initially, because there was no experience rating there and no reason to believe that this requirement would cause a rate increase at that time. That was one of their main concerns. A letter from Art Monroe indicating that they would not increase, but the senators didn't choose to, relate to that. He's a very young guy, pretty active guy, and my opponent said I was too busy to serve as a legislator. I don't know. At any rate, my point is that, you know, so I got a little idea of the legislative process.
Did the bill finally pass?
No, they referred the bill, you know, to they referred the bill to some committee for further evaluation. You know. They didn't know enough about it. It seemed to be positive. Max Howell, one of the senators, when you know, was opposed to it, and I learned that the fact that the bill passes the House has no real credibility in the Senate. You know, it's treated just like a bill which was initially introduced in the Senate. That bill, I thought I could get that bill passed. I introduced another bill which I knew I would not get passed, requiring political subdivisions to carry liability insurance to protect them against torts, ensure their agents who may commit certain torturous conduct. And I had in mind, you know, a few situations that I dealt with. A little kid got hurt on a playground because of defective equipment, and I had dealt with the case and wrote the city, and the city denied any, you know, of course denied. They said they didn't have any insurance coverage, and of course they were not suable under sovereign immunity in the state. So I had in mind that situation. Then policemen who were involved in certain torturous conduct, generally not financially responsible. The city doesn't provide any substance financially. And then I got into, a bill I introduced to limit the right of school boards to expel students for more than 3 days without certain limitations, hearings, and certain recognition of due process, without the presence of, you know, very strong conduct. That bill didn't even get out of committee. This other bill, by the way, didn't get out of committee either. And then the Equal Rights Commission bill, which I handled in committee and handled on the floor. And that bill basically was a bill which dealt with employment, very nebulous, vague bill, basically supporting the concept of equal employment opportunity as opposed to really providing any substantive relief, but giving the state a chance to affirm a policy, in my opinion, of a history of discrimination, and to recognize that I set up a structure in the state which would be somewhat involved in trying to work with that problem.
Is this the only state that doesn't have a human rights or civil rights or equal opportunity commission statewide as a policy?
And not necessarily. You know, I think there's some other, very few though. Most of the states around us do, I noticed in my research.
That was defeated in the House?
That was passed in the
House.
Basically got hung up in the Senate. Now they amended the bill to death in the Senate, and when that bill came back, that bill did not, we were not able to get that bill up for a vote in the House, but it came back only about a day or two before we recessed for 6 months. In effect, really adjourned. So we never passed the same bill. Both houses passed, both chambers passed a version of a bill, but the same bill was never passed. The version passed by the House was much stronger than the version passed by the Senate.
Is there going to be any attempt to get the governor to include that in his call?
This time? I haven't. I understand Representative Wilkins went to talk with him. But the governor-elect has indicated that he would sponsor the bill as an administration bill. And you probably gather that an administration bill, at least in the House, receives priority in terms of treatment, so that it will be brought back up in the next legislative session. And I understand Pryor will be behind it, so I think it will pass the next time.
You elected four blacks in 1972.
Right.
The same four were renominated this year.
Well, now Senator Jewell was not up for re-election.
That's right. I'm sorry. But the three in the House were renominated. But those blacks who did challenge whites in primaries or incumbents, all of them lost. Is that correct?
Right. Only two challenged. One in a special election, because one of the senators resigned his Senate position because of an income tax problem. And they held a special election and he lost. And then he did not challenge the guy who gained the seat in the special election in this primary, because I think he would have been up in the primary, because he only had a 2-year term and the guy was running to complete the first term. I was the only black candidate who had a contested race, though, in the primary. Black and Pine Bluff was not contested, and Dr. Townsend, who was the other black who holds the House seat. The white who holds the House seat here was challenged by two blacks. And I was challenged by two blacks in this last primary. So I've got a little bit more of baptism in politics this time. I learned a few more things about this district, I think, politics and how it's going to work, given the racial balance that it has this time.
You see more blacks running for the state legislature in the future?
Basically only in those seats which are which have majority black.
Is there going to be a move to take the House to single-member districts?
That move will probably not come about until 1980. 10 years from the...
Which would mean then that the racial composition of these districts really isn't going to change that much.
Not going to change.
So you're not going to have that kind of a switch or balance.
No. You're going to... No.
May pick up a few more.
You may pick up three more. Maybe. Not probable.
So the blacks as a group within the legislature, you don't see as becoming a...
No, I don't. I don't think that as a group, blacks will have a substantial representation for a while. And maybe when they do get substantial representation, I'm not sure, although I think the same concerns will be there. We as a group have difficulty isolating the issues, which cause us to stand out as a community. These issues are more sophisticated, I think, now than basically housing. They're not the symbols. You don't have the employment opportunities. They're kind of individual problems. Problems which are caused to by active government, action. As opposed to lack of government action to maybe eliminate the evils which developed as a result of the history of discrimination. So the black community is a community which is a community because it is because of the reaction of the white community to it, and individuals still to a great extent relative escape the burdens of which accompany being black, and to that extent, you lose a black man. People who are moving westward tend to lose whatever identity they have with the black community. The only identity that I see a black man has with the black community basically is through his church. If he's one who has at least experienced a pretty good job opportunity with the federal government, which is probably the number one equal employer in Southwestern Bell here in this community, and to some extent the utilities, although I'm involved in litigation in this area, so I'm a little bit more aware of where these employers are going. I don't see a total acceptance of the equal of Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act by the private sector yet. But my point is that blacks who have received equal employment opportunities, who move and have access to the housing in those areas which are now traditionally white lose their identity with the black community unless they maintain a church contact, which is majority black.
Or political?
Well, they vote in their districts, so they generally vote for white candidates, so that they would probably relate to the problem. They relate to me. They relate to this District 3 as a basis for representation. I'm sure that many of them relate to me more than they relate to their own representatives.
I was going to ask you about that. What we found in some of the other states is when blacks were elected, that people outside the district, that is from all over the state, saw them as their representative in the legislature. Did you find that true in the last couple of years?
I think that's true. I think that based on invitations that I've received, I think a black man had in the legislature this time in Arkansas has a dual responsibility. I think that he has a responsibility to the district, his electorate. But I think that he also has a broader responsibility. He's looked upon as a black legislator, and as a black legislator representing certain interests. I don't know if we can identify them with a great deal of accuracy, but these interests certainly extend over his geographical area he's representing. And he's considered a black leader. And a black leader, therefore, is a leader of black people. And this is probably the first time that blacks have had an opportunity to decide how the product will look, what he will stand for. Basically, the product being the political figure elected. So I think, yes, he has, and he may get a little bit more notoriety statewide. Little bit, at least in the black community, not necessarily in the white community. But the media, they basically deal with him as a state representative. Maybe if Martin Luther King dies or something happens nationwide, he will be contacted. The National Black Network, though, is developing, I see, will give you a little bit more recognition. He wants to get some input from you. But so a black legislator does have a broader base, a larger number of people watching him, larger number of people relating to him, partially because he's black.
There's now an association of Southern black mayors. Do you see, is there anything even on the horizon, anything active going on to develop any sort of similar association of Southern black legislators?
There is an association of black legislators. Not necessarily Southern, and their meetings, which are held, last meeting was held in Chicago, and they sent a list. They sent me a list of all of the black legislators, but there is a loose association. Yes, it's not extremely effective, and as I get more.
Have you been to any meetings?
I haven't been to, the only meeting I went to, not for the black legislators.
How about for black elected public officials?
I have not been to any meetings. The guy who called me, city councilman, Lester Hollingsworth, has been, to the meeting. This, at least in this community, we had not, I'm just joining, and I had not really had any real knowledge of it except through my close friend who was on the city council, just went on the city council too. The only thing, I went to a meeting in Atlanta, a voter project, a voter education project here, which is dealing with Southern legislators and trying to. And that may be an effort to deal with black locally elected officials on a regional basis.
How many people were there?
Not too many. Maybe some of the black mayors were there. And some of the legislators from Tennessee, but not a whole lot, not representative, not what I would consider a representative meeting of the black locally elected officials. There were many people there.
Now, the black legislators had any meetings with the governor?
Yes. Initially, we had a meeting with the governor. I don't think that we as black legislators have really been effective in terms of acting as black legislators. And I'm not even sure that it's possible now. But, you know, first of all, Dr. Townsend's much older. Different product, in my opinion. You know, he's a very good man, but he's been working a long time in civil rights. The idea of a black caucus, the name Black Caucus, was somewhat—he was somewhat sensitive, but did not particularly care for that name. Representative Wilkins is a political science instructor. I think politically sophisticated, what I would consider to be an effective black politician, recognizes what needs to be done, number one, to get elected, does those things, you know, get well cards to a person in his district who injured or hurt, and when somebody dies, you know, he does things to keep him to ingratiate himself with his electorate, and he always meets with the governors, but we're not working as a group. Now, I initially wanted to, I was one of the main, if not the only mover to work together as a caucus. In fact, I wanted to share our expense. We have an expense account, but that's a problem now. And have and hire and talk to Dr. Jewell about it initially. But I have not been able yet to get the fellows together. I think because of our small number, you know, there's a tendency, it's just been very difficult to get together and function as a black contingent. And then there's also a reluctance to do so by, you know, some of the members, because they do not feel this is, will work to our best advantage.
Is there an effort to organize black public elected officials in the state?
No. Has there been an effort? No.
Is there an effort coming?
Maybe.
Is there an identifiable black state leadership?
No. No, not in my opinion. The elected officials are just, you know, a fairly new breed. So we haven't had any real, although we're given credit for, I think, having the largest number. I think that's that is really an overstatement. In terms of impact, I don't think we have any impact. I don't think that on, and maybe because the issue, there's not enough there, you know, the polarizing issues are not there again. But I see, I saw nationally with the Black Caucus, with the national congressman getting together, a basis for a national effort, because I think that if they got together, you'd have some real chance of getting black elected officials together, period. But these issues now are becoming too sophisticated in terms of, you know, determining whether or not they are adverse or positive for black people, you know, and there's too much disagreement within the black community. My strongest opposition really came from the black community. I have, you know, this, one of the strongest, one of the persons who worked very, very strongly against me is the vice mayor, whom you might want to talk to, who's, you know, I've been knowing him all my life. But politically, he and some of the traditional black organizations. When I ran, I was not endorsed by one of the traditional black organizations who have traditionally been involved in politics, that is to say, who've been involved with the white politician in terms of helping get out the vote. and delivering the vote of the black community or trying to influence the black community in terms of the candidate to support. I think I'm perceived, I don't know why these persons were, I think that they were strongly opposed to me. I think there was a greater opposition to me personally. I mean, I don't think I'm subjected. There was some greater activity in my race than, for instance, in Johnston's race, in terms of black participation, either for or against. And I think this was so because, not because of anything that I've done necessarily, not because of, because I think I was a very good liberal white legislator, as opposed to really being a black legislator. And I'm partially because, one, we did not include many polarizing issues on the agenda. The death penalty bill was a bill which I thought nationwide, at least in the southern states in the legislature, found blacks on one side and whites significantly on the other side, and significant number on the other side. The Equal Rights Commission bill. And I think that's... That was about, you know, so the black agenda, there was no black agenda. There was no, we didn't include a black agenda on the legislative program, in the legislative program. The governor, however, did have a people's agenda, in my opinion, which had positive benefits for blacks who fit in that general economic deprived category, the kindergarten program, the free textbook program, the income tax reduction. This was a bill too I sponsored, reducing the income tax for low-income families. This was my first real, this was an experience where I learned a little bit about politics and how it worked, because the governor's aide called me and asked me whether or not I want to sponsor a bill. This was a bill to reduce income tax for low-income families. That's a bill which I could certainly relate to, and certainly most of the people in my district would find to be a positive bill. So I said, yeah. So I was one of the sponsors, and basically the governor selected me as one of the sponsors. Now I understand he selected Senator Jewell in the Senate. And this, therefore, the bill which I sponsored, I was a co-sponsor on, was enacted and became law. So this gives you a legislative record, theoretically, to run on. The only reason the bill passed was because the governor supported it, not because I had anything to do with sponsoring it. I don't even think I got up and spoke for it. Didn't have to. Everybody was for the bill. I think the bill passed 100-0 in the House. Passed by an extremely significant margin. But it does look on my record when I was running, and did was a bill which I co-sponsored, which became law. So therefore, you say that's a bill I passed. And it was a recognition that gives you some insight into the influence that the governor has over legislators, how he can help certain legislators if he wants to, in terms of giving them a record to run on.
Who in the governor's staff say handles that sort of liaison?
Well, Bob Brown called me. I knew Bob Brown from the, I've been knowing Bob Brown for a while anyway. I met the governor initially when I was in the prosecuting attorney's office, but he called me on that.
How did you find the governor when you did meet with him? Was it just a one meeting or two meetings?
As a group. Now I've been knowing the governor since he ran initially. Mm-hmm. I met him before he really got into the primary through a friend of mine who ran for Congress up there, David Stewart in the I think that's the 4th district, 4th congressional district. Always found him to be extremely personable, a very congenial person. Not one who, accommodating. not one who's especially sensitive. I mean, who's generally, I think he's sensitive to the plight of the common man again. Not especially sensitive to the problems of discrimination, to the need to include blacks. And I say to include blacks because I think that, much like I argue for inclusion on juries, that for those persons who have had a little exposure to blacks and who have a different language sometimes around blacks than they have when they're not around blacks, who have an appreciation for the black cook and the black janitor, but not for a black professional or for a black skilled employee or for a black teacher, who have limited concepts, and who through integration can, I think, gain a new dimension in terms of knowledge about blacks. I say that he's not sensitive to inclusion.
That means he doesn't appoint enough blacks?
Yes, in my opinion, that's exactly what that means. Doesn't appoint enough blacks, does not have a significant black on his staff who has his ear, who can at least apprise him, give him, I think he made many mistakes simply because he didn't have communication. He did not have a man on his staff who could prevent him from doing certain things that he probably would not have done. He simply did because of lack of information.
What would be an example of that?
Oh, I think that I had an example in mind at one time, too. Well, one example would be for instance, he appointed a black to a board, and he did not reappointed a person who was black to a board and did not know the person was black. Could have made a certain some of his speeches simply while some of his statements he met with a local group of leaders called the Round Table.
Black leaders? Though.
Yeah, what would call black leaders, professionals who who basically work for the state government or federal government, who are concerned about issues and meet together. And form this group called the Round Table, and they generally meet with the government. Government, I would say bourgeois, middle class, black people. I made several statements, I can't recall now specifics, but, which indicated that he didn't have a knowledge of the black community. By that I mean he might make a comment about one person who might not, might be a person who is who's generally disliked, as such in the black community. I mean, a little intimate thing, little things. It's almost like having an opportunity to know your name or know a little bit about you and not using it at all. Little PR. He tried to reach out and get certain, I thought he made an effort to reach out and get a new black, as opposed to the old black. When I say new black, I mean he made, for instance, Dr. Miller, who was appointed to the board of directors of Arkansas. I think that in regard to his issue, the merger issue, between AM&M, Arkansas AM&M, and the University of Arkansas system, without going into specifics, I didn't think that he, got the black perspective. And had he gotten it, he would not have, made some of the statements unnecessarily, some of the unnecessary statements that he made. He didn't understand what the issue was, at least in the black community. I didn't understand at least a certain perspective of that issue, as held by many black leaders. So, you know, these kind of things. He was just, you know, not informed.
Who advised him, say, in terms of black appointments and sort of thing?
Now, and he had, plus he had a white lady who was his number one liaison with the black community, you know, which is, you know, indicates some insensitivity, you know, to my way of thinking. And, you know, a person who says, I know, you know, I know how these blacks are. I'm white, but I know them, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's, you know, kind of, you know, you figure you do have an identification problem sometimes. I mean, if I'm running a business, I mean, I want to set up a structure there that you can relate to, too, based on your history and your background. You know, and not necessarily have a picture of your mother. But, I mean, what I'm saying is that depending on the environment, I want something that you can relate to if I'm going to try to communicate with you.
Who served that role?
I'm trying to think of her name. I don't think she was the wife of a doctor. And she'd been active in with the Human Relations Council and with the Urban League and, you know, with, and she'd been active in the black community. Samuels, Mrs. Irene Samuels. So, you know, you got that kind of, you had that kind of problem. Governor Rockefeller, and then you had to, you know, he came behind Governor Rockefeller, who made blacks, I think, pretty significant positions. And Governor Rockefeller had several blacks, not just one. I mean, he had Sonny Walker, who was, you know, a well-known black in this community. He had Cunningham, a guy named, you know, who was aggressive and was a, you know, hard-working person in any community. And he had a friend of mine who's on the city board now, Lester Hollingsworth, and appointed him to a non-traditionally black job. He was an advisor to the governor on prison affairs. And he had Sam Sparks, who was, you know, an advisor to the governor. And he had several blacks around him.
Do you think that Rockefeller was more sensitive?
I think that Rockefeller... I'm not sure that I can say as a man he is more sensitive. You understand what I'm saying? I'm saying that... But he had people around him who certainly made him more sensitive. I believe Bumpus has good instincts, you know, in terms of his identity. I think he might identify a little bit more with the you know, common issues than maybe Rockefeller could because of his background. I don't know. But I think in Rockefeller...